Tonight is impossible. Just a few months ago, none of us could have imagined, could have expected sitting in this room right now. But in the next few moments, I'd like to just briefly discuss how impossible becomes possible and the role that each of us in this room play in that metamorphosis. Rabbeinu Yonah and Shari Tshuva, we're entering Elul now. This is Rosh Chodesh Elul, we're supposed to be doing Tshuva. Rabbeinu Yonah in his Shari Tshuva makes a fascinating, challenging, depressing comment. He says that Tshuva is impossible. It's his words. Tshuva is impossible. By the time Elul comes around, by the time Rosh Hashanah comes around, we have already messed up so many times. The bad midos, the averos, they've been so ingrained. We've gone through the year, we've made so many decisions. We've become mired in chet. We're stuck in our ways. There is no way, no possible path towards tshuva. How can someone change an entire personality? How can someone uproot themselves completely and begin again? How can a person do tshuva? Rabbeinu Yonah suggests one answer, but I'd like, if you'll indulge me for just a few moments, I'd like to share a possible another approach, a possible different approach, something that's unique, a slightly different understanding of what tshuva is, a more appealing, albeit challenging, route to rethinking and recreating ourselves, a route which makes tshuva possible for all of us, and which may also shed light on the impossibility of tonight and the role of each and every one of us in the room right now, the role we play in making that impossible into possible. I'd like to discuss a route that starts at the roots. The Gemara in Erechin says, we're all familiar with the Gemara because it's the reason we don't say Halal on Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara says that on Rosh Hashanah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Melech, the king, sits on his Kisei Adin Kiviyachol, as it were, he sits on the chair of judgment. And he sits there judging Klal Yisrael, he sits there judging the entire world. And the Gemara says, we're familiar with the image, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sits, V'sefer Achayim, V'sefer Achayim, V'sefer Amesim Psuchim Lefanav. The Sifrei Achayim and the Sifrei Mason are opened in front of him, and he's judging the entire world. What are these Sifrei Achayim and Sifrei Mason? What are those books? So we classically tend to interpret that as the Book of Life and the Book of Death. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sits, he judges the world, he decides, discerns about our actions, and he says, this person's going to life, this person's going towards death. Sifrei Achayim, Sifrei Mason. But if a person pays attention to the wording, if a person listens to the way that was phrased, that is not how we say Book of Life and Book of Death in Hebrew. If a person wanted to say that the Book of Death was open, they would say the Sefer HaMavis was Pasuach Lefanav. They would say the Sefer Achayim perhaps, but for death you would say Mavis. Mesim does not mean death. Mesim means dead people. The Sefer Achayim, the Book of Living People, and the Sefer HaMesim, the Book of the Deceased, is what's open before HaKadosh Baruch Hu on Rosh Hashanah. Accordingly, it seems, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is judging the living and the departed alike. On Rosh Hashanah, it's a day of din, it's a day of judgment, not only for the people who are in this world, but also for the people who have already passed on and are in the next world. But that is quite a perplexing idea, no? A weird notion. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is judging people who have already departed, people who have already left this world, who are not able to perform any mitzvahs, who are not able to violate any averus, who are pater min mitzvahs, they are exempt from any obligations, they are in the grave, they are gone from this world. Why are we judging them on Rosh Hashanah? Why is the Kaddish Baruch who have a Sefer HaMesim open in front of him? The answer we can understand with a little bit of a mashal, a little parable from a different interesting halacha. The Gemara in Bava Kama teases out from the Psukim that if a person lights a fire in a field, that fire catches and it's flammable and it goes and spreads, and it ends up burning someone else's property. It ends up damaging someone else's mammon, someone else's money, and it causes damage that needs to be repaired. So obviously, if you make a hezek, if you are mazik someone, if you cause damages, you have to pay them back. You got to pay reparations. You'll have to do restitution. So the Gemara says, if a person burns down someone else's field because he started a fire, they're going to have to pay for all the damages they caused. That makes perfect sense to us. What happens, asks the Nimuka Yosef, what happens in a funny case? Not so funny, actually, for the guy in it, but an interesting case. Let's say someone lights a fire in a field at 1 o'clock p.m. And at 1.05 p.m., this person dies. He passes away. And that fire is still going. And the fire continues, and it consumes his field, and it passes along into the next field, and it damages someone else's property. Now, he lit the fire, But he was long gone by the time the other person's field was damaged. Does he still have to pay? Is he still on the hook? Or no, it happened after he passed away, so he can't be held accountable for those damages. Says the Nemuka Yosef, of course, this person is obligated to pay back for what the damage the fire caused. True, he passed away, but he's still on the hook, and the children have to pay from the estate. The children have to pay the money from their Yerusha that they inherited from the deceased party. Why do they have to pay? He was dead when the damages happened. So the Nemuka Yosef explains, and I think it's very logical and very understandable. A person is responsible, is held accountable for everything that happens as a reverberation, as a repercussion of the actions they do. This person lit a fire in his lifetime. That is an action that he did. What happened afterwards is all related to his original action. It's all his fault. It's all his achrayas, his responsibility. True, he passed on to the next world by the time the damage actually happened. But who lit the fire? He lit the fire. So of course, he's going to bear the responsibility and have the consequences of having to pay back for those damages. The Sfarim explained very similarly, the same Yesod, that very principle accounts for our Gemara. Why is it that the Sefer HaMesim, the book of the dead people, is open on Rosh Hashanah? Why are the deceased being judged if they are putter and they are lifeless and they are actionless in the next world? The answer is that the departed are held accountable for the reactions which reverberate throughout this world. If it was their actions which set the chain of events into motion, which is now affecting the world, then they are going to be held accountable for those original initial actions. We're held accountable not only for our actions, but for the consequences of our actions, for everything that happens later, whenever that may be. And while it's a frightening and challenging, heavy responsibility with which we're being burdened, it's also the route to tshuva. Because tshuva is impossible. We cannot tackle every aveira. We cannot uproot every bad midah. We cannot change every mistake we've ever made. We can't uproot our personalities and start fresh overnight. It's impossible. But the root to tshuva lies in the root of our personalities. We can't undo everything and address every issue that exists in our lives, but what the core midos are, what those initial missteps were, what did we do wrong so many years ago that snowballed into the ugly feature of Avera in our lives? When did we light the fire? Where was that initial spark that caused everything that happened afterwards? All of the reverberations, all of the repercussions, and the outcomes of our original mistakes are but reactions to our original actions. If we dig deep enough, we can uncover how we turned off onto the road in the first place, and we can redirect ourselves onto the proper path. If we can find the root of our sins, we can uproot those sins, and we could begin walking down the route of tshuva. But it's important to realize, zelu umazeh, in the very same way that we're held accountable and judged for all of the negativity which transpires long after we are gone, in that very, very same way, we're credited with all the positive reverberations of our actions. Although each day feels like we may have made a small, insignificant, pretty petty contribution to society, if we zoom out and we look at the repercussions of those mitzvos and maisim tovim, the positive reverberations, the endless reactions to those original actions, if we take a more holistic, overarching view of the course of history, we realize that our small, meaningless actions were truly tremendous, significant, world-altering contributions. Most directly, this kola was built by a few board members in Rabbi Glasser, a couple of dollars, it's all relative, and a warm embrace of the EULA staff and administration. Most directly. But the truth is, if we dig a little bit deeper, we see Evan Silver, we see Paul Gelb dreaming an impossible dream, a bug in their head, flying me out here on their own dime with no plan at all. Further back, we see a community shifted and shaped and prodded along by Rosh Kol, like Rabbi Brander, like Rabbi Graydon, who was here before. Those are some standout examples. Rabbi Fassman before them, and so many other personalities, rabbinic and other lay leadership. And the name of the kolel, the name of the kolel is not just a head nod to the lead gift on our organization. It's a testament to what Jack and Geeta Nagel together and the entire Nagel family have built over so many years in this community. They are the root of this kolel in the deepest sense. And go down the list of the founding donors. You have it in the brochures. Go down the list and you'll find many more families with that same storied legacy, that same level of contribution. These are the builders of the kollel. Creating this kollel was impossible. It is impossible. It was a dream, and it should have remained but a dream. It was a cute idea to talk about the Shabbos table, and that was just about it. Neither Evan nor Paul, nor any individual family or institution could have built this kollel on their own. But we each make small contributions. We each lay another brick in that wall. We each chip in just a little bit. Sit back and watch as those roots we planted sprout and blossom and become the living embodiment of our dreams. Building this kollel is as impossible as tshuva. But just as the root to tshuva lies in the roots of our character, so too the root to moving the needle on this community, to Aharamas Keren HaTorah, to advancing and pushing and becoming even more involved in Limud HaTorah and Shmiras HaMitzvos, to building our community around the kollel, along with all the others, the root to it all lies in the roots we lay here today. Everyone here is part of that effort. Everyone here has a share in this dream. You may contribute monetarily. You may contribute by participating in events. You may contribute by coming to learn, by coming to daven with us. But realize that your contributions, however small they may feel, they are the roots of something much bigger and much more significant than any of us could ever dream of.